the OTB Podcast Network.
It's time to talk rugby, and Louise Galvin is back with us. Good morning, Louise.
Morning, Owen.
So a bit of progress for Ireland since we were last talking to you. Were there enough signs last weekend to suggest that Ireland are actually going to make a success of this year's Six Nations?
There certainly were encouraging signs, Owen. I suppose we're not going to judge them off an Italian or a performance against the Italians, so it's too early to say. But I think they responded in a manner in which we would have been happy with. Yeah, a little bit of sloppiness in the second half. We probably would have hoped that there would have been a few more tries dotted down. But certainly in terms of what the media, the general sound bites that were coming out, what we were looking for, they certainly produced that, because it was a bit more of a varied game plan, a bit more of that new word offload that we're all looking for. We certainly saw more of them, and a nice spread of the scoring as well in terms of how it was happening, who it was coming off of. So yeah, I think overall it was quite a positive performance. Obviously, two debutants as well off the bench, and Ryan Baird and Craig Casey, and they both contributed handsomely. No major injuries to worry about. So yeah, overall, I think we'd be pretty happy with that outing in Rome.
Gordon Darcy is making the point in the Irish Times this morning that Ireland perhaps didn't show enough that they could attack from their own territory. This, of course, is down to the fact that Italy were unbelievably ill-disciplined at times. Is that the next step now for this Ireland team, to show that they can get from their own 22 into the opposition half without booting the letter off the ball?
Yeah, I'd actually agree with Gordon in that. I mean, obviously, a lot of our scores come from setting up that territory within the attacking half of the field. And it is something that... Again, go back to Mike Katz's comments nearly before the match, by talking about players, you know, taking that ownership, the responsibility to look up and to play. I think we're still seeing it more from the likes of Jameson Gibson-Park than maybe, some of the Irish-born and bred and trained players. There's still, I suppose, even if there's a turnover, I think we saw one opportunity with a brilliant rip. And I'm not sure, was it Will Connors managed to dive in the ball, or Tadhg Byrne, and keep it alive so it didn't go straight to ruck. When you can turn over the ball and you don't go straight to ruck, and you can move it away from that contact area, straight away there should be a switch going off that ball should be either shifted wide, or if there is space behind you, you can put in a bit of a dink, but not just an immediate, okay, we're going to play a territory kick here and kick it back, which is exactly what we did. So I think that's the next, I suppose, step of maybe what Mike Camp and Andy Farrell would be looking for, is that ability to break, especially off clean turnover ball that, you know, isn't turning, you know, we're not going to scrum, or we're not going straight to ruck, and we have to play two phases through the forwards. If we can get that ball away from that contact zone, which clearly the forwards are trying to do, and we can immediately turn that into a transition attacking opportunity, then I think that'll be the next step in terms of the evolution of the attack game of this Irish squad.
Because that definitely seems like one of the reasons why we're looking at possession stats and scratching our heads thinking, why isn't Ireland's high possession count turning into points? Like, that's basically it, isn't it? That other teams are doing better when they turn over the ball compared to how Ireland are doing.
Other teams are doing better. Look, I think it's coming back to, we don't want to just turn into, or we're not going to turn into a team that just plays completely off the cuff all the time. And we're always going to have our structures. We're always going to work off a solid set piece. And that's massively important, because it's such a huge facet of the game. And it'll always give you that, I suppose, solid foundation that you can then play off of. What we don't want is to rely on, you know, a magic trick play off a set piece that only relies on certain angles and lines and dummy runs in a certain way. We want it to be a foundation that we can then work off, you know, heads up rugby. But, you know, we still need our structure as well. So I think it's that it's only going to happen once or twice a game where you get such a clean turnover that you can really just spread that wall, get it out wide, get it to your dangerous players, where they've half a sniff of a chance against, you know, a defensive line that's only getting their shape. And it's when you can recognise that and transition it. And it relies on everyone switching on. It relies on your full back line, because you need your back three getting into position, but you need your 10, 12, 13 also getting ready to get a little bit of depth and realignment, so that they can either decide then, okay, I'm going to run and hold this player and then shift it, or I'm just going to shift it straight away out wide. And obviously our support line running then, and trying to get them running as much as possible as well.
Louise, when it came to the offloading and perhaps some of the lines that were being run at the weekend, maybe it helps because it was an all Leinster backline. Maybe it was helped somewhat by the way that Italy defended, especially when the game got a little bit more ragged. But do we expect that Ireland are going to go back to kicking from hand quite a bit when they go to Murrayfield? Because first two rounds, no team kicked the ball from hand more than Ireland did. Are we expecting an evolution of what we saw in Rome, or will they go back more towards the way they were playing in the first two games, do you reckon?
I think it depends on that whole contact zone, because again, like you've mentioned, Italy defended with not major line speeds and not huge physicality. They doubled in a lot on two-man tackles and yet didn't stop that ball from getting away. Like particularly, I think Will Connor's second try, I mean, you've Larmer taking the ball to the line, the winger jams in, and I mean, he's not Fakatawa. You should be able to stop that ball getting away, and yet Larmer is able to dish the ball to Will Connor. Scotland aren't going to defend like that. So you can only get that kind of offload style if you are breaking the line and getting two hands free. And obviously you have support line runners as well. I don't think Scotland would give it as easy to Ireland. So we're not going to start throwing 50-50 or even maybe 60-40 passes in that situation. So I think it comes back to whether the guys are going to get that over that advantage line and then can see that clear opportunity. And the Scottish defence is going to be a lot meaner than the Italian one. If we don't, then that's going to be the real test for the squad again, because now if we don't get that easy opportunity, which we probably won't, what are we going to do? Are we going to go straight back to a box kicking game or a kicking territory game? It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, which might play right into the hands of Stuart Hogg. When it comes to the Irish back three, Louise, we kind of, I guess, have to take it at this stage that Hugo Keenan is first choice 15 and is likely to play there unless there's an injury between now and the Scotland game. It seems James Lowe is the first option on the left wing. Do we kind of take it that Jordan Larmer is maybe just ahead of Keith Earls, or who would you expect to play on the right wing at Murrayfield?
Yeah, I suppose Larmer went off, picked up a knock at half time and gave Earls back his opportunity again. And I thought he was quite good in his half of rugby. I think in a game of rugby, every game is so different. You might start and be out of the 23 in the next game, depending on if, horses for courses. So it depends a little bit, like if we're going to play, if we predict that Scotland are going to rain a lot of ball down on top of us, then I would back Earls in the air over Larmer. If we want more of a game breaker, well, then Larmer offers a little bit more of that. And again, it might look at a bit of a future situation if he's looking further down the line. Does he see Keith Earls here for the next World Cup? Now, I'm not saying that he's not at all. I'm a huge fan of Keith Earls, but it's about what Andy Farrell wants. He obviously finished his try pretty well, but I think it was Johnny Sexton's vision and Chris' passing skills that made that more than anything else. So I think it depends what Andy Farrell wants and what he sees Scotland doing, because I know if certainly... if Scotland were to see Jordan Larmer there, I think they'd see him as potentially a weak link in the air for that defensively for the Irish squad, because he has been caught out in it in times before. I'm not saying he is now, but it would be a potential attacking threat for Scotland to rain down ball on top of him, whereas I think Earls would be a lot more solid. So it completely depends on what kind of game plan we're going to go with. Are we trying to keep ball in hand, which would be more of a Larmer type game? Are we going to be going back to, like you say, a lot more of the box kicking, which is probably more Keith Earls type of situation? And definitely Keenan's been brilliant. He's going to hold on to that 15 shirt until either injury or someone, or he runs out of form. And I think James Lowe seems to have pinned down that 11 shirt. We also have Jacob Stockdale, obviously played for Ulster at the weekend, coming back. So another positive for the Irish squad is seeing the likes of Stockdale back, seeing Robert Ballacloon actually as well, who, you know, I think he's a bit of an outlier from the Irish squad, but he's someone that I was particularly impressed with as well in his first few seasons with Ulster. Yeah, so it's definitely, we're looking like we have a bit more depth, but in terms of the 15 squad, for the 15 jersey at the moment, it's very much Hugo Keenan's, and he doesn't seem to have a lot of pressure in that position.
Yeah, and Rob Kearney was with us on Monday morning talking about Hugo Keenan, and I guess alluding to the importance of his sevens background. Like, I'm sure that fills you with pride hearing that, Louise, the fact that sevens is being mentioned for Ireland's lock at number 15 at the moment. What is it about the sevens game that might have improved Hugo Keenan?
Yeah, and it was great, you know, seeing those guys work so hard in that programme and dipping in and out the Leinster Academy as well. Look, the work rate is just huge. Like, I don't know. I mean, you'd obviously have to ask Hugo himself, but I don't think he'll ever work as hard as he will in a full-blown sevens tournament where you're playing a lot of minutes. And then you just develop. You have to manage every skill. You have to be able to pass so well, so crisply off both sides, tackle, jackal, seal rooks. You have to be good in the air as well. So I think you manage to develop a lot of skills. What 15s obviously brings into it is a mass amount of bodies and huge amount of tactical skill level or nuance as well, because it's not just about how fast or how physical you are. Then you have to bring in a lot more of kind of, I suppose, the technical aspect of it to break down teams. But Hugo, I mean, he was instrumental in Ireland qualifying to get on to the World Series in Hong Kong himself, and Jimmy O'Brien came back from Leinster and played a lot of game time as well. And I think Shane Daly came up as well from Munster at the time. So it's definitely a brilliant pathway. And I think if Ireland continue to use it post-COVID, the way the likes of New Zealand have been using it, where, you know, you'll have your seven specialist guys that are there, and then you're constantly breading guys through that you're looking to feed back into the provinces again and giving them their opportunity. Again, Robert, that I mentioned in Ulster, he would have been 13th man in that San Francisco Sevens World Cup in 2018. Which, again, I'm not sure he'd have gotten to where he is in that Ulster squad if it wasn't for the Sevens programme. The likes of Aaron Sexton last year as well from Ulster was inside the Sevens programme. So it's definitely another avenue. And I know he gets a lot of, I suppose, question about his role as well. But I think David Nussbaum has to be credited for pushing the programme from that point of view. I know there's probably people in the provinces that would have said they just wanted the players to themselves all the time. But we are seeing some of those players come to fruition. And I do think they're certainly benefiting from the game. And if anything, their massive work rate and fitness is certainly something, particularly for a 15 position in Hugo, which they would have benefited from.
You kind of touched on it there, Louise, but it definitely seems that the positional awareness, your decision making is improved by the game, because as you say, there's just more open space, there's less places to hide, I guess. And when you ally that with the fact that this guy was trained in athletics when he was Blackrock College as well, there is a brilliant product there for Irish rugby to take advantage of. And you'd wonder if this is actually one of the answers that people would be able to be provided with when they ask, where is the investment going into actually making more skilled and more intelligent rugby players?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing with sevens as well is that there's so many, like in Northern Hemisphere 15s rugby, a lot of teams play pretty similarly, whether it's in the Champions Cup or in international rugby. And even Rob Kearney alluded to that when he was speaking with you guys during the week. But in sevens, because there's so many different styles and you're really up the coalface of it when you're playing, so you maybe get exposed a little bit more to different styles of rugby, as opposed to, okay, everyone's going to play pretty much off the same baton as they do in Northern Hemisphere. You're exposed a lot more to different styles, so you have to adapt a lot more. It's a lot more thinking on your feet and under fatigue as well. I mean, both technique under fatigue and decision making under fatigue are huge facets of the game. I think Hugo, if you watch him, is a really good guy for always looking once he breaks halfway through the tackle whether he's going to give an offload it or not. And I think, again, that's something that's really important, because you always want the player in possession to think it and yet have the decision-making capabilities to actually know it's not on, the next guy isn't in as good a position, or he's not available, he's not ready for it. I definitely think that a level of decision-making and technique under fatigue is something as well that's probably honed both from his sevens days and just being an overall pretty good footballer as well. I mean, that line that he took, you can't coach that. I don't think you can coach that. I think that's inherent in someone. And it was minuscule. And obviously there's so many facets of that try that he scored that were so important. And I think there's brilliant interplay between the backs and the forwards. Obviously we worked off our solid set piece. But still that little bit of because the space is out wide, but he knew he's going to cut a hard line slightly back in at that inner shoulder of one of the Italian forwards, and that his own marker, his own opposite fullback had kind of lost him a little bit in his eye line, and he just went for it. And, you know, those opportunities, they don't present in every game, but when they come, you need the right player to be able to avail of them. And Hugo certainly did.
Louise, can I ask you about Johnny Sexton? He signed this new one-year extension to keep him at Leinster, and Ireland central contracted until the summer of next year. Like, there's been so much talk in this tournament about finding Johnny Sexton's successor and who is the next in line. Were you surprised to see him play the entire game against Italy at the weekend?
Yeah, I think when you know, we weren't making so many changes. You could say maybe did Andy Farrell want Sexton on the field when Craig Casey was coming on, but we more often than not change both our 9 and 10, so I wouldn't say that's an obvious reason. Maybe it was a real firm backing from Andy Farrell that he wants Sexton staying on until the World Cup. You know, we can all just, I suppose, speculate as to what the reasoning was behind that, because certainly you'd be thinking game over, Scotland in 2 weeks, let's get him off the field before he picks up another head knock and he's ruled out for Scotland and England. But he was playing so well. I think, you know, if someone's just in form and in the groove, maybe they just had a little word and decided, no, I'm really feeling really well and I just want to finish this game out. You know, all we can do is speculate. But what he certainly did was he certainly consolidated his position as the best number 10 in Ireland by a long shot, to be honest. I mean, thought he was pretty good. He varied it up. He was certainly playing heads up, switching around, coming around blindside. He was taking the ball to the line. That pass for Earls, again, we were talking about whatever, 78 minute of the game, was just class. So I thought he played pretty strong. And he's certainly our number 110, but it still doesn't answer all our questions of, is he going to be there for France in 2023? I suppose we're all a little bit delighted to see Joey Carberry come back, but that's going to be obviously something for down the line. He's not going to be featuring in this year's Six Nations. But yeah, we still have the question of who is going to be successor, but we're pretty happy to see Joey Carberry back in the at least.
Just to go back to Darcy's column, his final line on Ireland is, let's see how the Munster game goes this weekend. But is it too much to dream about Joey Carberry being sprung from the bench against England on March 20th? Right, by the sounds of things, Louise, I think you're saying it's probably...
I think I'm a physio background as well, and I've also been in an environment where you're picking up injuries and you're picking up long-term injuries. Look, as any player in the world won't... it would be unfair. It would be unfair of him from a physical point of view, and he might be ready to play now, but is he ready to perform? He needs to get game time under his belt. I don't think that's going to happen at all. I don't think it would be fair on him, and I think it would be just too much of a risk in such a huge game. I mean, we could both be coming into that final game. Obviously Ireland England is always massive, but things don't go well in Murrayfield, and you know, England have France this and in the week after next, so we could both be coming in with one win. I don't think it's the right place to be bringing him in unless we start to pick up injuries, like Johnny goes off against Scotland and Billy Burns goes off, and all of a sudden, and Joey puts down 60 minutes for Munster at the weekend against Connacht and has a stormer and things are going absolutely brilliantly for his rehab. I'm talking about very specific situations. Otherwise, I don't think we're going to see him.
Louise, for many of your former teammates, very frustrating about the Women's Rugby World Cup being pushed back now to 2022 as well. Hopefully, they're going to have a Six Nations Championship coming up in a couple of months' time, but there was plenty of speculation yesterday about potentially playing Spain in effectively a qualifier semi-final, and then yesterday evening it was announced that the tournament's going to be pushed back by 12 months. It's been difficult for a lot of those players who've been preparing for competitions that haven't happened over the last year.
Yeah, and I think that it's so difficult. I'm devastated for the girls and the squad. I think, I'm not sure if people are aware, but the girls are training away ferociously. They've been doing camps Friday, Saturday, Sundays up in the National Sports Campus for months on end, waiting, doing what their bit to prepare for what was the end of the Six Nations in October, which, you know, fast forward to Six Nations this year and the World Cup qualifier, and eventually obviously hoping to go to New Zealand in September. And it's all been, the rug has been pulled out from underneath them. So it's absolutely devastating. And the thing about sport, you know, we're talking about amateurs, so they're all, you know, making career decisions based around this tournament. They're, you know, even as far as going, we're talking about women here, they're probably some people are talking about childbearing decisions around tournaments. They might be waiting until afterwards. To think that that's all been push back a year, like, it's just so devastating. But I completely understand at the same time, it would be worse if we came to June, July, and the squad is nearly picked and all their annual leave is used up and they have all these contracts with their employers that they can head off. And all of a sudden the rug was pulled out from under them then. So at least I think they're better off to make the decision earlier rather than later. But it's just, so difficult. At the very least, I hope, because the amount of preparation that has gone in, which has been massive for Adam Griggs and his squad, I really hope they get to play Six Nations games in April. I suppose that was aligning to the new global window that was, or the global competition that was commencing in 2022. Is that going to happen now? If there's going to be a World Cup year, who knows? You know, there's a lot for World Rugby to consider, and all the various stakeholders. And I know they have put women's rugby as one of their primary goals, I suppose, for this period in their strategic plan. So I really hope they continue to back it, because obviously it needs the investment, it needs the funding. But for our own Irish girls, it's just absolutely devastating. As I say, there's a lot more than rugby decisions that are made around these kind of World Cup that happen once every 4 years for girls. So I hope they're all fit and available and able to put their hand up for selection and to push for Ireland to get qualified and perform well in 2022.
Louise Galvin, great stuff. Thanks a million.
Thanks a million, guys.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.